Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is William Fearman, a professor of Central Eurasian Studies and Political Science at Indiana University. He is one of the country's leading specialists on Central Asian politics. His current research focuses on languages and nationality, policies, politics, and social problems in Central Asia. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Fearman.
Thank you.
And of course, there are problems in Kazakhstan in particular at the moment. And this is a country that doesn't get a lot of attention, although it has lots of natural resources, particularly oil. And it is the oil workers who are upset and on strike. And apparently they disrupted a public celebration marking the 20th anniversary of Kazakhstan's independence on Friday. And many were killed in a clash. 13 were killed in a clash. So is this a sign of a kind of Arab Spring coming to Kazakhstan?
I don't think so, not at this stage. There is certainly dissatisfaction among groups, but Kazakhstan is not one of the... It has some important differences from the countries, the Arabian countries, where there have been uprisings. This is a post-Soviet society. And while there is, I would say, growing dissatisfaction among large segments of the population, I think that by and large, most people are not terribly dissatisfied with their status and their economic well-being.
But aren't a lot of these post-Soviet republics notoriously corrupt in terms of one-man rule? And Nazarbayev has been running that place forever, hasn't he?
Yes, indeed. I mean, now you've put your finger on one of the really key points. Nazarbayev probably would have won a popularity poll a few years ago, and even today probably would do so. Kazakhstan, because of its oil, has had more resources to spread out, and some of those resources have trickled down. But Nazarbayev, we should keep in mind, has been around since before the collapse of the Soviet Union. Nazarbayev became the first secretary of the Communist Party of Kazakhstan, even before the Soviet Union collapsed, and he has remained the leader ever since then. And in recent months, years, President Nazarbayev has become much more of not just a central figure, but almost a cult figure. There have been monuments placed to the living president in the capital, Astana, and in what used to be the capital, Almaty. They've just made a new holiday, December 1st, which is the day of the first president, which means Nazarbayev. He's been given a special title of leader of the nation, and it's really a bit over the top, and some people, I think, are becoming fed up with what has become a cult of personality of the first family, and particularly the president.
So William Fearman, again, professor of Central Eurasian Studies and Political Science at the Indiana University. And what about, though, if he has this power and this cult of personality, which sounds like it rivals Stalin's, wouldn't he therefore be likely to have inordinate control over the revenues from oil? What kind of a distinction is there between the Kazakh National Treasury and Nazarbayev's personal bank account?
Well, I don't think that we could say that they're all in his personal bank account, but there are without Nazarbayev's blessing to stay in charge of some very lucrative and corrupt sections of the economy, it is impossible. That said, I'd like to distinguish Kazakhstan from some of the other countries in the region, because by comparison with countries like Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan is a country where, despite the cult of personality, there is something of a civil society that has grown up. The press is controlled to some extent, but there are a lot of different sorts of opinions that can be expressed, and certainly access to the internet, although certain sites might be blocked. People get around it without great difficulty, and there's no punishment. People come and go as they please. So I would not like to describe Nazarbayev as another Stalin. That characterization might be more apt in one of the other countries of the region. And it, with regard to the violence that's just broken out in the far west in Zhanaozen, I think it's important also to keep in mind that this is has been a strike. There's been people gathered on the in the center of a town for 6 or 7 months, and they've been standing there. One wouldn't find that in a country like Uzbekistan or Turkmenistan. They would have been removed long ago.
So there's certainly no analogies with Stalin's brutality in the gulags, etc. But what is the role of the oil companies? Now, Chevron initially went in there in the big oil discovery. Tengiz, I think, is the name of the oil field.
Right.
So what role do the Western oil companies play? Because my understanding is that it's always been difficult to get oil out of the stands in the former Soviet Union.
Yes.
Because everything, the pipelines all went through Russia.
And exactly.
So where does it stand now in terms of, because they've obviously got enormous potential markets in India and Pakistan.
Right.
For oil and gas.
Right. One of Kazakhstan's central problems is how to get the oil someplace that where it can be bought without losing a lot of the revenues along the way. The Soviet economy was set up in such a way that all the republics, as they were called then, of the Soviet Union were very closely integrated. And indeed, it was set up that some of the oil that was the raw petroleum that came from Russia was processed in Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan had the facilities to process some oil. And yet there was oil in Kazakhstan, another part of Kazakhstan, that was exported to Russia for processing. And so one had a situation in which Kazakhstan had oil refineries, but it wasn't for the oil refineries there. There are new opportunities. Kazakhstan is looking for ways to export oil to China. There are possibilities, perhaps, depending on what happens with some of this going toward Europe across the Caspian. There's been discussion of a pipeline there. This company where the strikers were, this was a joint Kazakh-Chinese joint enterprise. So China has certainly been very active, and China is trying to diversify its sources of oil in any way, and Kazakhstan is happy to have a customer, a way to sell its oil without going through or to Russia, at the same time as there's a wariness with regard to China.
Well, what specifically is going on here, though, William Fearman, again, professor of Central Eurasian Studies and Political Science at Indiana University? What's going on with this joint Kazakh-Chinese oil operation that would be such that the workers have been on strike for, what, 4 months or something?
About 7 months, I believe.
7 months.
Yeah.
And one of them is quoted by the Associated Press as saying, we have no rights, we're being treated like cattle.
Right. First of all, let me place this area of Kazakhstan that we're talking about is way out toward the west, an area that is not very densely populated, an area which if you were to take a train from the major cities in Kazakhstan, it would take you 2.5 days on the train. So it's way out. These protesters have asked for higher salary. They have asked for equal rights with foreign workers, because some the companies hire some foreign workers and pay them more than the local workers. And they've asked for the right to organize a labor union. And when they demanded that, this was back in the summer, there were, I believe, about 1,500 who were just fired, and there were enough other people, hungry people, looking for jobs, and they were hired instead. So we have they set up this protest on the main square of Zhanaozen, and it's been there for about 7 months. There have been some attempts to get people to disperse, but it's been there for a long time. And then came this major celebration. It's the 20th anniversary of Kazakhstan's independence. And what exactly happened is still a little bit foggy. There are contradictory accounts. The official press in Kazakhstan is saying that the strikers and their supporters who had gathered on this main square on the anniversary of independence began to take some actions, such as setting on fire a stage which had been set up on this same main square for celebration, and they set up they set that on fire. They set police vehicles on fire. The available accounts seem to be in sync, that indeed the stage was set on fire and burned down, that police vehicles were set on fire and turned over, that a hotel was also burned down, and that the local government office was also burned down. But how the thing started, that is unclear. The reports I have read so far from the other side say that there was a crowd of the strikers and as many as 5,000 of their supporters at the time, and a police vehicle rammed into the crowd, and that set it off, that they then went on a rampage, setting various objects on fire. The information has been hard to get out of there because they've closed down all the internet coming out of there, and so reliable reports are just not available. There seem to have been some sympathetic other actions taken, that there was a demonstration in the provincial capital of Aktau. There was also a train station where the traffic, train traffic, railroad traffic was stopped by, according to the people supporting the strikers, by in sympathy with them. But the details are still sparse. There seem to be 13 confirmed deaths and 86 people wounded, although the strikers say that there were more. There have also been a number of arrests. Some people were arrested immediately. But I think the reports say about 70 were arrested right after this. And then there was a curfew and state of emergency declared, and some additional 60 people have been arrested for curfew violations. So there have been internal services troops have been sent in, and right now the place is still has a state of emergency, and there are checkpoints going into the city and apparently a number of places within the city to restrict the movement.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, William Fairman. It sounds to me that there's more to be learned about the Kazakh and Chinese oil company and their treatment of their workers. And, you know, the Chinese had some problems in Zambia with African workers. It doesn't sound like they're the most gentle economic colonists, if you will. But they have built a pipeline, aren't they? They're in the process of building a pipeline Kazakhstan all the way across the stands into China.
Yes.
So they're obviously going to be a long presence there.
Yes, the Chinese certainly a growing power and in some way a rival for Russia. The Kazakhs in some ways are welcoming the economic opportunities, but the Kazakhstan is a huge country which some people fear would be an object for Chinese migration, and they don't want to be taken over by the demographic flood of Chinese.
Well, I thank you again for joining us here today. Okay. William Fairman.
You're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with William Fairman, who's a professor of Central Eurasian Studies and Political Science at Indiana University. He is one of the country's leading specialists on Central Asian politics. His current research is focused on language and nationality, policies, politics, and social problems in Central Asia. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.